Hey, citizens of the interweb, you have landed on A Shot and a Beer, a weekly interview podcast featuring chefs, brewers, troublemakers, and heartbreakers. Every week, we're talking food and booze with people who do it for a living. So grab a beer, pour yourself a shot, and come along for the ride. All right, Shot and a Beer is back. Took a week off to reset and regenerate. Ran an episode with the incredible Tommy Gomes. We did a redo on that. Give me and Maddie a little bit of time off. How are you, Maddie?
Top notch, sir. How about yourself?
Not too bad. Not too bad. I had a big week. Performed a whole bunch for me. I know guys that are on the grind, so to speak. It wouldn't have been that big of a week for them, but I actually was up four different times this week, four on the weekend, six different times this week.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, and set is coming into form nicely.
How many minutes would you say you have at this point?
What's that?
How many minutes would you say you have at this point?
I can probably do 15 with only a little bit of air in it. Anything beyond that, it's going to be me up there just basically grasping for shit.
Mm.
And that's really, I really want to improve incrementally. I want to improve 15 in for this 6 months, maybe stretch it to 18 or 20 the next 6 months. But I don't want it to be just, you know, if you lay everything end to end, you probably... You know, all of us who do this probably have 45 minutes worth of material, but it's not a set. And I really want it to be a set.
Right.
So I think I feel pretty confident that I could probably do 15. Beyond that, I would just be grasping for shit.
Get a little dicey.
Yeah. How about you?
Went up to the Hollywood Comedy Store on Monday.
I saw that.
With Vince D'Amico and my roommate David Weiser, that was a great time. Got to see Ron White and Chris D'Elia and Brody Stevens all work.
Ron White's been spending a lot of time at the store.
He has been. I guess he's working on new material because he was.
Is he going back out on the road?
I guess so. I mean, he was working his the first part of the 15 minutes that he did in the OR was all brand new. You know, you could very much see that he was just riffing on stage.
Mm-hmm.
And then the second half of it was like, oh, that's a polished bit.
You know, yeah, a little more like set pieces.
Absolutely. So it's amazing to see him.
Did you guys all get up?
David Weiser did and Vince D'Amico did. I did not. So, which I'm not super sad about. I don't think I'm quite ready to present another 3 minutes
for that
there.
For that bludgeoning again.
Well, I don't want to repeat anything, and I want that 3 minutes to be really good. So,
well, that's good. Oh, it sounds like it was a great trip at least.
It was absolutely. Vince smashed two applause breaks in 3 minutes.
Did he really?
Legitimate applause breaks.
Holy crap!
Yeah, he broke the room. He went up eighth. He was the first one that got everybody laughing. So.
Nice.
And then David Weiser, you know, he did great and did his material, and it's cool to see. You know, since he works at the La Jolla store, he has an opportunity to go up there.
When did he start working at the La Jolla store?
About 3 weeks ago, two or three weeks ago. So he gets preferential treatment.
Yeah.
For you know getting up there, and so it behooves him to go up there quite often. So
right.
It was a good trip.
Well. Now that we're all caught up with each other's lives, time to get on with the show, and very excited about our guest today. He has been a friend of mine for probably at least 3 years now, and is a bartender here at the Madhouse, the lovely and talented Dave Callens. How are you, Dave?
Hello. How are you guys doing?
We're
Thanks
good.
For having me. This
we're
exciting.
Good. And no, we're very, very happy to have you here.
I'm just waiting to get to the shot part of the shot and a beer recording.
20 minutes, Chief. 20 minutes.
All right. That's the only reason I'm here.
I don't think we're making it.
I don't think so either.
It might be a 10-minute.
We all kind of start off the same way, Dave, with kind of give us a quick rundown of how you got to this point in your life. I know you're not a native San Diegan.
A lot of
I know
failures, a lot of crash and burn. Finally hit rock bottom, and here I am.
And here you are.
Can't tell. Dave's also a comic as well. So.
But you are originally from Detroit.
Detroit, yeah.
And what brought you out to San Diego?
Well, first of all, Michigan just sucks. It's just the weather is horrible. The winters are harsh. The summers are fucking horrible. It's shitty. There's nothing to do. So I was working at a restaurant, and a friend of mine, we were just hanging out one night. She's like, man, I've always wanted to move to San Diego, but no one would ever move with me. I was like, let's go. So like the next day we bought a newspaper, looked up classified ads. This was back in 96. It took a couple weeks to get some shit together.
You've been here since 96?
I only stayed for a few months that time, and then I went back, but then I came back for good in 99.
Oh, wow. I didn't realize you'd been out here that long.
Yeah. Back then, in 96, you could get a one-and-a-half-bathroom apartment a block from the beach for $600.
Holy.
Yeah, those days are long gone.
So when I came back in 99, I was trying to convince my girlfriend at the time to come with me. I'm like, oh, my God, it's so cheap. Let's go. And we came out here. I was like, ooh, wait, something happened. And now it's even worse. So, yeah, but I've been out here for about 17 years. Do not miss Michigan at all. I only go back when I have to.
What would you do when you first got out here?
I worked for TGI Fridays, so I just transferred to a Fridays out here. The first time. The second time I came out, we came out here with no job, no place to live. We basically lived in the U-Haul for 2 or 3 days, so we got a place. We coasted on our savings for a few months. I finally got a job as an orderly at a hospital. Which was a weird and fun job. And then I went back into waiting tables.
It strikes me as odd that you would choose hospitality. Because, you know, knowing you a little bit, as far as customer service goes, you're essentially a sociopath.
A little bit, yeah. Yeah. when friends come and watch me work, like comedians that we all know, mm-hmm. and they're like, you actually talk to customers like that? Yeah, so Robert is not the hugest fan of my work personality, but you know it's fine. I don't think I have too many bad Yelps.
Well, it's interesting. It's a different kind of bartending here at the Comedy Club, because it's essentially, even though it's because of our setup, it's a big beautiful display bar
with seats at the front.
But it's essentially a service.
It's a service bar, yeah. When we're working, it's a service bar, and that's one of the highlights of my evening is when I tell people I can't serve them; they have to go to their table.
I love watching the dejected look. You can see by their body language, like the shoulders slump, and they make their way back to the table with no drink.
It's not just me being an asshole. I mean, that's a big part of it, but it's also functional. Like
it's our
just
system.
The other night, there's times in the night where I'm like, okay, I'll take a walk up if they come to the bar, just because like I'm through all the shit, whatever. But I let three women. Matt Bird was working. Yep. I let three women walk up to the bar. They were super drunk, super loud. I had to shush them several times while speaking to them, and also while they're trying to order for me. Matt Bird, that was working the door, he came over a couple times, told them please keep it down. So it's like it's also you're a distraction.
Yeah.
Shut the fuck up and go sit down.
It's the only time there were actually six of them. They were three of six, and they were actually sitting at the table that we're recording this now. Mm-hmm. And they were unbelievably gorgeous and just the biggest fucking cunts I've ever met.
They were actually sitting there before that table got leaked on.
Yes, that's correct. Yeah, okay. They got moved up to this table, and they're the only table I've ever asked if they wanted to step outside to the side patio during the show. Because it was very clear that I almost felt bad for them. They clearly had no idea what they had walked into. They were super drunk. We were not the venue of entertainment.
Was it a bachelorette party?
No, it was just six.
Might as well have been.
Might as well.
It was girls' night out. Girls they said it out. Several times. Girls' night out.
Yeah. So, I mean, they were fine. They weren't awful human beings, but man, did I hate
them. They were
close.
Yeah. And it ended, it was like you couldn't have scripted a better ending, because after annoying me at the bar, and I got a few digs in at them, you know, just talking shit to them. And then they came back to the seat while the headliner of the show was wrapping up his set. They started to talk to him to a point where he had to engage. Mm-hmm. And so it was towards the end of his set. And so he had to talk to him. He's like, oh, what? They're like, come hang out with us. Like, where do you want to go? Trying to be funny. One was like, your mom's house. And he's like, that's a weird choice. My mom's an old Hungarian woman. So he kind of not only deflated their attempt at humor, but then he's like, to close his set and close the show, he's like, and my mom would be like, why did you bring these whores over? Brought the fucking house down, ended the show, and it was just perfect.
Perfect way to end the show. That was Zoltan. Zoltan, as we've talked about before, just fucking amazing.
Yeah. So yeah. That's that.
Since we are primarily a food and beverage show, how do I want to say this?
12.
What kind of drinks do you see most often here? Is this more of a shot in a beer kind of bar,
not at all. People love the fancy drinks.
Shameless plug for the show. It's a shot in a beer kind of bar. No, it's more of a cocktail.
Yeah, they love the cocktails. In fact, that's one of my standard responses. Like, the few times I have to work with customers is in between shows on the weekends. Mm-hmm. I have to go out on the patio for people who are waiting for the next show. And whenever someone asks me, do you have a drink menu? I typically respond with a yes. It's called things that a bar has. Like, act like you've been to a bar. What did you order then? And tell me what you want. Because we have a few foofy drinks, but they're nothing fancy. It's like things you could get anywhere.
Right.
So people look at the drink menu, then they order something else. My biggest pet peeve, I've got like 17 of them, but one of the biggest is when they order one of the martinis.
Mm-hmm.
And I always warn them, that's a martini, it's pure alcohol. And it's a coin flip whether or not they complain that it's too strong.
Right.
I literally just told you that's pure alcohol.
Right.
So yeah, we get a lot of cocktail orders, a lot of cocktail orders.
You know, one of the things that I think it's a mark, almost of sophistication, that I tell young guys this all the time. You need to be able to find one highball that you actually like and can order with confidence.
Absolutely.
And it's kind of part of being a grown up. If you see somebody that's like, yeah, I want a chocolate martini, and I remember
martini.
I remember my first drink too. But if I'm ever going to order anything other than the typical Jack and Coke that I have, it's going to be a Manhattan.
Yeah,
and I know which bourbon that I generally like my Manhattans with, and I order them specifically.
Yeah.
When people look at cocktail menus, it's like, okay, you don't know what the hell you're doing.
Yeah, they have no idea. And then even when they order it and I bring it to them, for some reason, they weren't able to translate the words they just saw on the menu to what I just handed them in a glass. Like, they had no idea what it was.
Right.
Guys crack me up the most because I don't know why. There's like some sort of macho thing about it, but they'll ask for martinis in a different glass. Or if they
Other
ask...
Other than a martini glass?
They don't want a martini glass, yeah. For some reason, it's girly or it's something or other. And I always call them out, and I'm like, bro, it's not the glass that makes you look girly. It's the drink that you ordered. So,
and the skinny jeans.
Yeah. But that's a big one. We get that a lot.
I don't mind. I don't mind having a martini glass in my hand, but it's more of a place setting. If I'm at like a high-end steakhouse and I'm dressed better than jeans and the Dickies shirt that I have on, It would be ridiculous for me to be sitting here with a martini glass dressed like this.
Right.
Looking like a truck driver. But if I'm dressed and I'm out, I don't think a martini glass is effeminate.
Yeah, I don't know. That whole mentality just boggles my mind. Like, I'll wear pink. I look fucking great in pink. These guys who are afraid of certain things is like, really, man? Are you that unsure of yourself?
Well, what I like is, yes. Is that a pink shirt? Is that a pink shirt? It's salmon. Oh, okay. I gotcha.
She picked that out for you, didn't she?
Yeah, salmon is just a marketing ploy to sell guys pink shirts that they wouldn't normally wear.
You know, one thing that I love about your Midwest background, Maddie is really the only one here that's from the East Coast. Technically, Pennsylvania is considered the East Coast, but I don't really feel like Pittsburgh is East Coast. Pittsburgh is much more Midwest.
Yeah.
It's Rust Belt.
Yeah, for sure.
I miss a lot of the food from back home.
Comfort food.
Yeah, I really do. What specifically do you – I know you've recently, because you had – some bad things happened with the family, and my sympathies on that. But what do you eat when you go back home?
You know, there's a lot of like Michigan foods that I just never got into. Like one of the big things for people from Michigan.
Please don't tell me you don't like pasties.
White Castle. I fucking hate White Castle.
What?
That's a big thing in the Midwest.
Get off really? Of White this Castle's podcast it's right now. Go oh my home God, and hang your head in shame.
No, it is awful. I mean, it's
horrible.
Really,
oh, yeah.
Absolutely, but it's horrible.
They made that one good movie with Harold and Kumar, but that's all they have to do the credit, really.
Oh, man. I can destroy a bag of dirty whiteys.
Oh, I'm sure you could. We lived in Minnesota for a few years when I was, 8, 9, 10 years old. And so occasionally we'd drive back to Michigan for mm-hmm. the summer to visit. When we came back, my dad would buy, like, just huge boxes of White Castle and throw them in the freezer. And oh, God. Wow. That stuff's disgusting. Not a fan.
Isn't also Little Caesars based out of?
Little Caesars, believe it or not, used to be good pizza.
Really?
Yeah. Like you go now, they do
when
that
they first
$5.
Started, yeah.
Like back in the '90s, it was good.
When they
it
did
was,
the two pizzas.
Yeah. You'd order a pizza, they would give you two. And it was good shit. It was really good. I don't know when they made the change and they're like, you know what? We're not making good pizza anymore.
We don't care anymore.
Little Caesars was really the first company to step up to Domino's and go, okay, you guys have this market, but we're going to make a better pizza.
Both Michigan-based, by the way.
Yeah, we're going to make a better pizza, and Domino's felt it. Little Caesars really kind of put the hurt on them for a while.
Yeah, I was never a fan of Domino's either. They changed some shit a few years ago. Now it's all right, but I'm not a big Domino's fan. One of the big things in Michigan, and I think this is almost like Detroit and suburbs specific. I don't know how much it stretches to the Midwest. National Coney Island. That's mm-hmm. a chain. That's a big thing in Michigan. Like, everybody loves it. And that's one that I go to. I love Coney's. It's good shit.
Wow.
Did you know that trivia?
No, I did.
That a Coney Island hot dog was actually born in Michigan?
It doesn't surprise me. It doesn't surprise me at all. It's just marketing.
When I lived in upstate New York, they used to, a lot of the hot dog places, a lot of the bars would serve hot dogs called Michigans. And it basically was a Coney. It was a Coney.
Nice.
And my girlfriend, who became my wife at the time, was from Michigan. And I was like, so you must like Michigans. And she goes, I don't know what the hell you're talking about. So it was a completely fabricated name. But that style of beanless chili on top of hot dogs, I love them. I love them.
It's interesting because it's sort of like one of our cuisines out here. You were just talking about Michigan, and people don't mm-hmm. know what the fuck it is. If you go outside of San Diego and ask for a California burrito, they won't know what the fuck
you're
talking about.
They have no idea what you're talking about.
But we had the gall to name it after the state rather than after our city.
Right.
Like, we're claiming the state. This is California.
We have to lend it some credibility here. We can't.
Well, you know, and people, when they move from here, one of the first things they say is, I miss the fish tacos. A fish taco is quite possibly the most easily replicatable food in the world. You fry a piece of fish, you put some cabbage on it and a little crema, and you're there.
When I moved out here, I was kind of surprised that the seafood wasn't as good as I expected it would be living that we're on right. the fucking ocean. Like, it's all right, but I thought it'd be so much better.
Yeah. Yeah, I think a lot of the Baja influence on the seafood has really shut down a lot of the invention. You know, I think everybody is looking for, okay, it's perfectly fresh and the ingredients are perfectly fresh, but they're all kind of the same food group.
Yeah.
You know, it's all...
Not a whole lot of variants.
Chopped onions and cilantro and tomatoes and...
It's kind of like that Jim Gaffigan bit about when he worked at the Mexican restaurant and people would ask him what's in it. And it's beef, cheese, lettuce, tomato, sour cream on a roll or on a tortilla. That was every dish.
Every nice. Single dish.
I just fucked up that bit really bad. I'm sorry.
Hey, don't apologize to us. Apologize to Jim
Gaffigan. I apologize to the entire world.
But, you know, I think, you know, having been up and down the East Coast through work and living and all that, there's a lot more variance going from New England
right, there's a
to
lot
the low country
more regions.
To Florida.
There's a lot of, yeah.
To then, you know, the whole California coast, everybody has embraced, I hate to say it, the fish taco and that style.
The avocado.
And you would think that there would be, it's not until you really get to Oregon that you get more of the Pacific Rim
right.
influence
yeah.
Up there.
And I feel like once you get up there, I feel like their seafood's better than ours.
Oh, I would say arguably so.
Yeah.
Guys, we are at the 20-minute mark. How spectacular
is that? Made it.
Hey, we made it.
I did my shot already.
Cheers, boys. But what else do you miss about home, Dave?
Nothing.
Food-wise.
Seriously, nothing. Like even Coney Island, I don't like the Coney dogs, mm-hmm. but I like just Coney, like the chain. I like their, it's nothing fancy, but it's like it's got that Michigan, you know, feel to it.
Yeah.
There's not a whole lot of food. One of my restaurant jobs out there, I worked at a Mongolian barbecue, which you can find those a lot of places, but the one we had, it was like one of the first ones in Michigan,
mm-hmm.
and it became a national chain, and then it all fell apart and they all closed. But like for a while, that was like one of the hip spots. It was like no one had heard of that. No one had it, so we were always busy. It was a fun job.
Right.
But other than that, I mean, there's not really much regionally that I think, you know, I have nostalgia for.
Yeah. See, that surprises me because there's – granted, there's a lot of comfort food, there's a lot of Midwesternness, and don't get Maddie started on the Midwestern because he hates everything Midwestern.
I just don't like passive aggressive, all right?
But you ever spend any time in Hamtramck?
Yeah, a little bit of Polish food, yes. That's wasn't really in my younger years, I was really restrictive of what I would eat. I wasn't really adventurous. Mm-hmm. So, you know, back then I didn't try that stuff, but now. But yeah, Punschke Day, that's a big fucking thing back in Detroit and in Hamtramck. Yeah. What is it? That's what we do on Fat Tuesday out there, I think, is Punschkes. Like, it's fucking in Hamtramck. They make millions of them. We eat them all. It's great. But Polish food in general, yeah, we have it's a big thing out there. I just never got into it.
It's one of those things they've done an awful lot with very little.
Yeah.
It's, you know, it's a lot of cabbage. It's a lot of potatoes.
Yeah.
It's food for hard times.
We don't know when we're
going to
eat again.
Yeah. So we don't know when we're going to eat
that
again.
I think that was my biggest turnoff is I'm not a fan of cabbage. But there's
then I'm surprised you like Polish food at all.
I like pierogies. There's like little mm-hmm. certain, yeah, I fucking love pierogies. Obviously love punschkes. But yeah, that's there's a big Polish community out there and they mm-hmm. have it nailed down.
A lot of Germans too.
I guess. I don't know. I mean, I remember we had a big Polish community. We have a lot of, like, even in the suburbs when I was growing up, a lot of Chaldeans. So a lot
really?
Of, yeah. It was a huge part of the population. And they didn't really have much cuisine going on, not to be stereotypical, but honestly, they all owned party stores. Which, that's for those that don't know, that's what we call a liquor store back in Michigan. It's called a party store. And every party store in Michigan sells pizza. And it's the best fucking thing ever.
Wow.
Like, that's one thing I miss. I miss party store pizza.
Really?
You can't get that out here.
I have to... It's weird. I don't know if this is just, you know, the people that I've met and, like, a coincidence. But I know, like, 3 or 4 comics that are all from Detroit, Michigan. 5 comics I can think of from the Detroit, Michigan area. Like, Ron Taylor.
Trey.
Matt Lockwood. Emily Allen.
Do you think there's something about like that specific area of the Midwest? Is there something that breeds a funny type of person?
Just how miserable it is living
there.
It's
just miserable.
It's the suffering. It's built
exactly.
into the lifestyle.
Yeah. Yeah. One of the things I think we're known for, maybe this stretches to more Midwest too, is our driving. Like just aggressive driving, like get the fuck out of my way, that kind of thing.
Right.
You know, Garrison Keillor, who was from Minnesota. One of the great storytellers of this or any generation, talks about the winters up there. And the winters up there, it's like it brings people together. There's something about 30 below that you're, you know, you make the bus driver wait on that person that's shuffling down the street. He goes, in the middle of summer, when it's nice out, it might as well be Manhattan. Nobody cares about anybody else. But when it's really, really shitty outside, there's a part of you that, hey, we're all in this together kind of thing.
Yeah, I think part of that is they're both miserable. Winters and summers are miserable.
Oh, yeah.
Because in the summers, the humidity gets up to like 80, 90, sometimes 100%.
Mm-hmm.
You walk outside, you're instantly just sweating.
Yeah,
it's like swimming through the air. It's like I have never felt anything even close to that out here in San Diego.
But you know,
like they'll say 50% humidity here. I'm like, this is nothing. This would be 10% Michigan. I don't know how they calculate that shit. But the difference is in the winter, people die from that shit. So yes, you'd be like, hey, hold the bus, let this. Right. In the summer, you'll just pass out, and then when it's night, you'll wake up. So fuck that, dude. They'll be fine.
Well, you know, though, the shittiness of Michigan, if you can say that, I will disagree with you. There are parts of that state that are absolutely gorgeous.
Geographically, it's nice. It's just the weather is really...
Well, and Detroit is kind of a bomb crater.
Yeah.
But, absolutely. But my third wife, her family used to have property on a lake in the upper lower peninsula. And it was gorgeous up
Yeah,
there.
Anything on the water is awesome, obviously. Yeah. And in the northern part of the state... a lot of great stuff. Traverse City is a nice place to visit. Mm-hmm. Really, the sand dunes. Never really got up to the Upper Peninsula, but I'm sure that's even better because
it's a lot of trees and a lot of iron mines.
Yeah, it's like not developed. It's not, you know, you can just fucking hang out and enjoy it.
Yeah.
So what got you involved in food and beverage? You're already working food and beverage while you're out there
in Michigan.
Yes.
Yeah, I you know, just teenage jobs and getting out of high school and shit like that. My first job was TGI Fridays, and you know, from there.
Yeah, busser.
Yeah, bus Fridays was probably one of my longest stints of a company that I stayed with. I busser, worked up to barback, worked up to server, got tired of the front of the house, went to the back of the house. I worked expo, I worked window, I worked broiler, basically everything except bartender.
You're actually a very good expediter.
Expo is fun, dude. I fucking love expo. It's one of my favorite jobs.
And you know what? That's an invaluable skill. A lot of people don't put enough stock in how much a good expo can actually help a kitchen.
The thing about here at the Madhouse, when Robert opened this place, I would just hang out as a comic, and I would.
That's basically how you got your job, right?
Well, I would just hang out here and help out on expo because I gravitate towards that because that's in my blood now. It's part of my DNA. So I would just expo on weekends and just hang out. And the thing about this place, you could not find an easier expo job ever than here.
No,
it's basically just, does it get ketchup? Does it get a knife? Does it get a spoon? That's it.
Yeah. Ranch.
That's it.
You're not having to put garnishes on. Yeah. You're not having to...
Oh, God, it's fucking easy.
You're not having to go to multiple windows to put an order together. It's all right here.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's nice.
What exactly are the responsibilities of a good expediter for the people that don't?
Depends on where you are. A lot of places, as I just said, a lot of places, expos have their own tray of garnishes. That certain dishes get this, certain dishes get that.
That's how it was at Fridays. Like there was garnishing was a huge thing. Like a lot of dishes got a lot of different things, a lot of sauces, and like a bouquet of parsley, just shit like that, just for appearance.
Yep.
But not only that, expo, I think in my experience, you're responsible for ticket times. Like if something's going long, you got to get the kitchen fucking make this. I need this fucking now.
So you're keeping an eye on everything.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And sometimes you'll get, you have to make a call on whether, okay, if this item is in production, can I send the rest of this ticket and
you
this
have
is
to
going
time
to come
that.
Out in a timely manner?
Right. By the time they get that food there, it'll be ready and I can send it behind.
Or, knothead, did you just start this?
Right.
And it's going to be 10 minutes because you can't do that. You really always want to send a table complete.
There's like some juggling too. Like, okay, this ticket is already except for one thing, and that one thing's going to be a while. This ticket, I can take one of the things from that ticket to complete this ticket and send it out since I'm dragging it and I'm here. It's like a big puzzle. It's a lot of fun.
Balancing act.
Yeah.
And in some places, you're responsible for the expo will have all the dressings.
Yeah.
So you have to read tickets, actually put the dressings on, or the additional sauce, or we don't have a lot of additional stuff. Our plates basically go into the window complete.
Yeah.
So, like Dave said, there's not, does this need a steak knife? Yes, no. That sort of thing.
There's like three tick boxes
here.
It's really
a good expo is the liaison between the glorious godlike creatures that are on the cook line.
Oh, and you can look at them and you think glorious.
And the unwashed heathen who are the servers out front.
I just want to point out that our servers at the Madhouse are very washed and clean and, you know.
I don't know about Kenny.
All right. Well, Kenny's a little dirty.
But, yeah, no, it's a good expediter is the one person that actually should be talking.
I was going to say that too. Like
in the kitchen, rather than
they just want one voice.
Yep.
They don't want to have to listen for different voices. Like they just want. So if a server needs something, they should tell the expo. The expo will tell the kitchen. Otherwise, the kitchen, they have so much shit going on, they can't listen to a bunch of different people telling them stuff.
You know, and people standing in the window, people walking up along the side, going, "Hey, I need the."
And plus, the expo is going to prioritize those things. So if three different people are asking for something, they tell the expo instead. The expo is like, "Okay, this is the order of how important those are. Let's do it this way."
So literally, mm-hmm. Expo is like a conductor, like a train conductor.
And that's why, like I said, if somebody, not enough places pay attention to how important a good expediter can actually be to a service. Mm-hmm. If you have a bad expediter, the service staff can be kicking ass. The kitchen can be firing on all cylinders. You have a bad expo, you can have a bad service.
Wow. So everything just collapses on that one linchpin.
Yeah. Yeah.
For sure.
It seems like that's all of food and beverage. Like it is this machine of all these little tiny parts all working together and like one single little part doesn't work.
And if a gear goes out, Dave has to change a keg and that keg is buried among other kegs in bag, bar production basically stops.
Yeah.
So then he grabs a door guy and then
and then seating stops.
And then
stops. So, it's all got to work in concert. That's why, you know, I get so pissed at the guys in back when they're like, "Oh, we're out of this." Well, when the fuck were you going to tell me we were out of it before, hopefully before we have three of them on the board?
And also, it's like, are we out of it or does it need to be prepped and you just feel like you don't have time to prep it?
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, last night we had caprese skewers that we were making to order,
yeah,
which is just ridiculous. And I said, "Well, why didn't we make caprese skewers?" "Well, we don't have any basil." Okay, knucklehead, we have pesto, so we have basil that we can drizzle on the caprese skewers.
Is pesto and basil the same thing?
No.
Oh, okay, good. I thought I was.
pesto is made from basil.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
We didn't have any fresh basil, but if you want a little basil on the caprese skewer, then you drizzle a little pesto on it.
Oh, okay.
It's everything's got to kind of work in concert. Otherwise,
I don't want to disrespect the front of the house because I spent a lot of time there. But for the servers, if one server goes down, that's manageable because you just have one pocket of tables that's suffering. The rest, everything else is going fine.
Yeah. Right.
But the expo can fuck up everything. The bartender can fuck up everything. And in the kitchen, one person goes down, that's going to fuck up all the tickets.
Yeah. Right.
So like servers. It's okay, but anybody else is like, this is important.
A good server can make up for something going down.
Right.
Well, no, a good service team can cover a bad server.
Right, mm-hmm. Right.
They'll just kind of expand their territory into, they'll annex tables if someone is just having a meltdown. And
kitchen,
you know,
you can't really do that because everyone has their own station they have to be focused on. And bartender, like Carl said, if one thing happens, the bartender's
unavailable. Since we run really lean.
Yeah.
We run one bartender most of the time.
Yeah.
Going back, and I know I'm touching on this, but it's because I'm going home next month, and I'm really excited because I'm gonna get the shop down at the Strip District in Pittsburgh, and we're gonna do cookouts with my buddies and all that.
You gonna see the Stanley Cup?
I don't know if it'll still be in town.
Yeah.
I'd like to. I really would. I that was a great series.
I stopped watching after the Red Wings got knocked out. We had a couple of good finals, 2010, 2011?
Oh, my God.
Or something like that, 2008? Maybe. Beat you one year.
And then
you guys
beat you the following year.
Yeah.
That was the beginning of the dynasty, and then it took 7 years to come back and do it again.
Right, right.
But Maddie, what food or beverage do you miss from home? And Dave, you didn't even bring up Faygo.
For me,
I don't want to be associated with the Juggalos. I love Faygo. Let me be clear. I love two flavors of Faygo: Red Pop and Rock and Rye. And I'm leaning. I'm more Rock and Rye. Red Pop is when you're a kid and you just fucking love that sugar and the sweetness. Rock and Rye goes great with whiskey.
Well, and Red Pop turns your tongue bright red.
Yeah, and I think back in the day, I think they had to do a recall on Red Pop. They had to change the recipe because it was making kids all fucking ADD and shit. But yeah, I do miss Faygo. I just don't like to advertise that because I do not want people to associate with the Juggalos, who are the worst people.
What about Verner's?
Yes, Verner's is good. Yeah, I can actually find that out here. A lot of stores have it, but it's good. It's not quite a ginger ale. It's a little variation on ginger ale, but it's good. It's regional.
Almost like a sarsaparilla kind of ginger ale kind of
thing. No, it's much more dry.
Yeah, I don't know if harsher is the right word, but it has a little more bite to it. I think.
Yeah.
Now, definitely. Now I want to try it.
It's definitely, like, Canada Dry is kind of the standard ginger ale. It's so much better than Schweppes. But Verner's is like the tough guy version of Canada Dry.
Right. I don't know if you've ever heard of, this is super regional. I went rock climbing in Kentucky a long time ago, and we went, some friends who had been there before took a few of us who had never been, and like, oh, you got to try this pop they have here. It was called, the label, it says Ale-81, and it's pronounced a late one. And it's in glass bottles, and so they bought a case of it, and we're camping, and they're like, here, try this. And you take, it's one of those things, you take a sip, and you're like, ah, this isn't very good. You take another sip, and you're like, yeah, I don't know if I, and before you know it, you've drank a whole bottle, and like, give me another one.
Right.
It just has this weird, it's a ginger, it's not quite ginger ale, but it's a ginger-based pop, and it's just, I don't know. It's good,
it's good, but it's weird.
You can only get it in Kentucky, I think. It's so strange.
So what about you with Eastern PA?
Oh, the biggest thing I miss, and my at least once a day, my heart breaks for missing Wawa. That's the biggest thing. I miss Wawa.
You miss
more.
The chain itself?
Oh, I miss everything about it. I miss the people. I miss the coffee. I miss...
For a second, I was like, you miss your baby blanket?
No. Wawa is a... I don't even know how to explain it. Because you can't... It's like the Matrix. You can't explain what Wawa is. You have to experience it. But it's a convenience store, deli, gas station. But it's so perfectly run. Like, where it's like, it's not like a 7-Eleven where there's only two people and one of them is overdosing on heroin in the back. Like, it's a team with a manager, and there's three people behind the deli. There's two cash registers, it's ultra clean, fresh coffee. Like,
it's an incredibly well-run company.
Unbelievable.
Sounds awesome.
Oh, it's amazing.
No, they've taken the convenience store attached to a gas station and actually turned it into a place where people want to work.
Yeah.
They pay them a living wage.
Pay them a living wage, great benefits.
How far does this expand? Is this just Pennsylvania?
They're expanding.
And it's more East Coast Pennsylvania.
Is it actually called Wawa, or is that some sort of affectionate name for
it? It's
Wawa.
Named after the town it was based out of.
Okay.
The first one, Wawa, PA. And which is supposedly named after like the sound that Canadian geese make going over, you know, when they're...
Seen a lot of Canadian geese, never heard that.
Yeah, I know. It's you know, crazy Native Americans. But they're in Florida.
Bunch of drunks.
I know. They're in Florida, Jersey, PA. They're all East Coast right now.
Okay.
But I want to send them like a corporate message. Like, hey, if this comedy thing doesn't work out, like, I'd love to open a franchise. Like,
the equivalent on the western side of the state is Sheetz.
Ugh.
And there's shut up. Ugh. And there is a constant battle as to
it's like
those
two
supremacy.
Philly cheesecake trucks that are across from each other.
They're
and people like one
the
and,
same
yeah.
thing,
and yet so different, so different.
I've driven across country a shit ton of times, and so I think I don't know if maybe this is the equivalent or not nationally, but like Flying J truck stop. That's like the best truck stop. Like if you see Flying J, like, oh, I'm stopping there.
I don't even need gas, but
I'm stopping.
Yeah. But yeah, but Wawa, just their part of their stock and trade is they make great hoagies.
Mm-hmm.
People will go if they want hoagies, they will go to the gas station because that's how good their hoagies are.
That's like party store pizza in Michigan. Like if you just want a slice, you'll just go to any party store.
Yep.
It's good pizza.
And they would make sandwiches to custom orders. Like my favorite sandwich was a rye bread, roast beef, spinach with chipotle and bacon.
You're gross.
I know.
Yeah, kind of.
What? It was delicious. Don't judge me. Don't judge me.
No, I'm kidding. That sounds good.
No cheese?
Oh, yeah, and cheddar cheese.
And cheddar.
Yes.
All right.
That was my... That was, oh man, what I would love to go. Oh,
I've never stopped anywhere in Pennsylvania. I've driven through it a lot of times, like on my way to New York, whatever, but never really spent time in Pennsylvania.
There's a huge chunk of it that you can just skip. Like, there's only, all there is Pittsburgh and Philly. And
yeah, driving through it is beautiful, like trees and just
nothing
but trees.
And a whole lot of
trees
and mountains
yeah.
in the middle.
Yeah.
Abandoned coal mines. You know, it's beautiful.
Yeah, great stuff.
Yeah, there's a reason that State College is out in the middle of nowhere.
Oh, yep. Absolutely. Dead center of the state.
Yep.
I do miss State College. I can't wait to go back there. It's been a while.
Why?
Just to see, because every time I go there to see how much it's changed.
Oh,
with
yeah.
it being a college, like the last time I went there, so I graduated in 2004, and I went back there in 2009, and there were like three new buildings. And
did you graduate from Penn State?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I had no idea.
Yeah.
How do I not know that?
I don't.
Much time as we spend together.
Yes.
But yeah, it's. For me, some of the memories of home, it's just because Pittsburgh has got such ethnically diverse neighborhoods. It's, you know, a lot of the Italian food is just, it's, none of it would be considered gourmet. It's all grandma food.
Right, right.
But stuff like that, some of the Polish food, the Hungarian food, I miss that sort of thing out here because it's, for everybody being, okay, I can't say everybody. For a lot of people not being from San Diego.
Right.
It would seem like there should be a lot more food ethnic diversity.
Yeah, no, I agree. Yeah, a lot of immigrants in this town, like a lot of transplants, I guess is a better word. A lot of transplants.
No, we're all immigrants.
But yeah, there's like
we escaped the oppression of Pennsylvania.
I feel like back east you see that a lot more, like ethnic enclaves, like you know, like you said, like there's Polish, there's Italian, there's whatever. Out here, there's really not. It's kind of just.
Well, there's Little Italy, but it's not
that's
like
not
it's
real.
Not like it's an it's
yeah,
an
no,
enclave
it's not real.
Of the Italian residents.
Yeah, no, that's
in
not real
town.
At all.
At all, I was
it's manufactured.
Yeah, I was researching the history of that. That's completely manufactured by the Chamber of Commerce. So
yeah.
Just like we need a Little Italy section.
Yeah.
It's not real.
Here's some interesting point. I didn't know this till a long time after I lived here. Broadway, because if you're driving downtown San Diego, the streets A, B, C, Broadway, E, F, whatever. Way back in the day, early 1900s, I guess the mayor's mansion was on D Street, and he just thought that didn't sound good, so he had the name of the street changed from D Street to Broadway.
To Broadway, just
yeah.
because he wanted to be able to put Broadway on his
address. Yeah. So that's why that's
address.
A thing. Yeah, exactly.
Oh, my God. But, you know, going back home, there's a portion of Pittsburgh, there's a neighborhood called Polish Hill. And they probably have gentrified it.
It's actually a valley, but
no. But they have probably gentrified it and called it something else now. But
yeah.
It's Polish Hill because everybody there has a last name that's 16 letters long and it's got J's and W's and in it. And it's there's a lot of really great Asian food. It seems like every week there's a new ramen place opening up,
yeah.
which is great because I love ramen.
Right.
But it doesn't seem like we're getting a lot of representation from.
Dude, it's funny because I had
other
no, like,
just ethnic food.
Being a college student, I had no idea ramen was like
a real
food.
Thing.
Like,
yeah.
There's a ramen place? Are you shitting me? What, do I pay a quarter and I get dinner?
They actually open the package for you and pour on the hot water. Yo, dinner, sir.
Yeah, when I was in the military, it was the same thing. We'd go to the commissary and buy, you know, you could buy ramen for $1 a pack.
Yeah.
And buy, you know, 30 of them and eat them in the hot pot, the
oh,
illegal
sure.
hot pot in the dorm. But, yeah, I had never realized that it was a real thing.
Yeah.
And we're doing it exceedingly well here in San Diego.
Yeah, we are. That's true.
That and pho.
Pho, whatever. Pho is something pretty special.
It is.
Do you guys both like pho?
I only had it once and did not know how to pronounce it, obviously, but it was very good.
It's good.
Where did you have it?
I don't remember. It was in a group of, like, let's go and just walk down the street.
I feel like pho is just ramen soup.
Mm. That's good.
Yeah, but it's with the garnishes and all that. I think it's different enough, and
yeah.
you get a lot more meat choices.
Yeah, that's true.
With you get you know you can get cooked beef, raw beef. You can get beef tendon,
Dude, this is one thing I hate about San Diego, and I just noticed when my parents were in town. I was trying to find a place to take them for dinner, and I wanted just someplace, you know, basic, like fucking Applebee's or whatever, Benning, whatever, nothing too fancy. We have so many, like, quote-unquote, gastropub type things, like really foofy, like specific. Mm-hmm. Like, there's no, like, just general, like,
blue,
oh, here's
collar,
a burger. Yeah, everything,
class,
yeah, everything's,
kinda,
like, fancy.
Right?
And I'm like, what the fuck? Just have, like... You ain't got to be special, bro.
No,
just
this
have,
needs
like,
to be an experience.
Yes, exactly. And I kind of hate that.
It's. I think it's. We're from as a food from a food perspective, we're still trying to kind of find our way. You know, you got a place like DZ Aiken's, the Jewish place up in La Mesa, that is very very simple and very very. They know exactly who they are, and they've been around forever. And you know what you're going to get when you come in there.
Right.
And I think a lot of people, they think that there has to be a hook other than just really good, solid food.
Yeah, everyone's trying to find a gimmick or, like, overdo it, and it's just like, ugh.
Well, you know, I think, like, here, my goal here was to make the menu interesting enough that I won't get completely bored with it in 6 months.
Right.
But make
we're bored with it, by the way.
make it accessible enough that people... We do different food than any other comedy club in town.
When we first opened, I think we overreached. Like, we had a 4-page food menu, lots of really weird gourmet niche stuff, which was all good, but it was just too much. And so then we had to pare it down. You came on board and redid it, and it was fucking awesome. It was really good. And now we're waiting for your next version because you're going to revamp it very soon.
Yeah,
and we're all excited to see what you come up with.
Please don't take away my chicken palo.
July 20th.
But
new,
you did a great job with the menu.
Well, thank
here.
You.
It was amazing.
Thank you. It's well, I you know, it's you can't you have to balance. Number one, you're eating in a comedy club. The tables are pretty tight.
Right. You want it to be nice, but not too nice.
Yeah, and it can't be a we can't cater to the dining experience.
Right.
Because once the lights go down. The servers basically stop talking to you.
Right.
They become order takers.
Yeah.
So that was kind of the weird balance. And the new menu is going to be accessible, and it's going to be fun stuff, but I can't reinvent the wheel here. I can't.
But that's
I can't
one of the things you do.
That's
one of the things you do well is like you'll be able to multiply. Like we have a cut of steak here, which is really good.
Mm-hmm.
You got like three menu items out of three very different menu items. Mm-hmm. We have a chicken breast. You got a couple of really different and unique menu items out of that. It's like you're able to use one thing for a few different really nice purposes.
And it's the economy of scale. I mean, I have to because what you do behind the bar will always make more money than what I do in the kitchen.
Oh, for sure. And that's sad.
you know, we are – it's my goal to keep costs down and not lose money in the kitchen.
Right.
Because we really make money on drinks, ticket sales, et cetera.
Yeah.
And it's kind of how it has to be. And once you accept that, I learned that working in hotels because no matter what I did in the kitchen, I'm not making as much money as selling a room.
Right.
Mm. You know, a room will cost us $25. $30 to maintain, and we can sell it for $140.
Right.
I don't have those kind of profit margins.
Yeah. Right.
And going to hotels, you have to learn how to accept that because coming from independent restaurants, the food was the thing.
Right.
You know, we would stand and thump our chest and scream to the gods, but
here it's like we have to have food, so people will be like, oh, I'm going to be there for 90 minutes. At least I can eat.
Yep.
It's almost one of the. We have to have it as a necessity, but we want it to be good too.
Yeah, we do.
We don't want to just have like wings and fries and nachos, whatever.
Right.
Because it is part of our identity as a comedy club.
Like,
we're the comedy club
with good food.
Yeah.
And
a surly bartender.
I don't know.
And a surly bartender. Well, one surly bartender, one attractive, nice bartender that everybody likes.
We have three bartenders.
Other one.
And the other one. And Lissette.
Fortunately for you, none of them listen to this podcast.
Well, I was just going to let them decide. You know, they were both going to go, oh, I'm the nice one that everybody likes.
But then you screwed that up by going,
Lissette. She doesn't listen to
this. We'll fix it in post.
Right?
No, actually, we won't.
Nope. So, Dave, I mean, you came here in San Diego in 99.
Yes.
So switching things to kind of a comedy, because you've been, were you doing comedy when you moved here to San Diego?
No, not at all. I didn't start comedy till 2006. I'll be 10 years very soon.
Okay.
And for me, it was one of those things where I just like, I think I'm pretty funny. I bet I could do well at an open mic. And so I went and I got on the Comedy Store, which has been around forever.
Forever and ever.
And I did my I was married at the time. My wife brought some friends. I did really well. Like, I'm a good writer of jokes. Like, I'm pretty funny. So I went, like, maybe my first 3 months of doing open mics, doing pretty well every single time. It was a few months before I actually bombed, which I think was almost a disservice to myself, because I was like, holy shit, that sucks. What happened? You know, if I would have bombed up front,
oh, your second time,
I feel that might have been a little easier for me to take.
Right.
But since I went a few months, I'm not saying I killed it, but I did good.
But you're getting
laughs. I did good. And then I fucking bombed. I was like, holy shit, what was that?
Yeah, did you hate yourself after that first bomb?
Well, I hate myself even after the good sets.
Oh,
I mean, that's
true.
Just part of it. But yeah, it was fun. I stunted my growth in a lot of ways. Like, one of the other things I did is, for two solid years, I only did the open mic at the Comedy Store.
Oh, wow.
I didn't go anywhere else. Like, people would tell me, like, I would meet comics. They'd be like, oh, you should check this out. You should check this out. I'm like, no, I'll just... And
what were some of the other open mics going on at that time?
There was one called the Comedy Co-op,
mm-hmm.
Which is now closed. The Winston's, actually, I think, was happening at the time, and I got invited there a few times, even by Jeff Bilodeau, and I just, I was, like, really insecure. I'm like, I'm doing good here. I don't want to venture out and I don't want to test myself, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I was kind of a pussy. But I also, I wouldn't stay and hang out, which is important.
Huge.
My wife, we had a good relationship when we were married. Everything was fine. She would come to see me, but she didn't want to stay.
Right.
And so I was like, okay, let's just leave after my set, which is a little bad etiquette. But more than that, I wasn't getting to know people.
Yes.
You know, I wasn't immersing myself in the scene. So that stunt, I'm going to grow. I did that for about 2 years, which kind of hamstrung me a little bit.
That really is a huge part of it, like the social element.
Yes,
like
absolutely.
When you're hanging out.
Meeting people, getting on other shows, even just trading notes. Like, I think you should say this. No, try this, whatever, stuff like that.
It takes a while to get comfortable enough
absolutely.
For people to say
that. That's kind of where that aspect of it really kind of helped me turn the last corner that I have turned, is that I used to doing bringer shows.
Yes.
You got to know the bringer guys, but it was always, we always do these shows on an off night, so there's not a lot of the other guys in the scene hanging around.
I feel like
this
that's kind of a dead end.
Well, and this was before there was an open mic 7 nights a week,
right.
So I got to know this bringer producer that I worked for would book the same 6 to 13 people.
Right.
So I got to know those guys really well, but they weren't working anyplace else either. And it's once I got out of that and got to know more people in the comedic community, and being here and meeting the open mic guys, it's just, you get absorbed into a greater whole.
Yeah. Bringer shows are tough because you can do well at a bringer show, and you can do well just sticking to bringer shows,
because
that's the nature of the beast. Like, people, it's the same guys. They have people that are willing to come out all the time, which is kind of rare, but, like, I guess that's why they're bringers.
Yep.
But if you don't break out of that, you'll get stuck in it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you won't get on better shows at different clubs. You'll just kind of be stuck in that little bubble.
Yep.
And so that's one thing that's, you know, it's great you're able to do that, is to step out of that and be like, you know, I'm going to expand to different horizons. I'm going to move out of this. I'm going to, you know, make things better.
Yeah, there are guys that I think could actually do comedy everywhere, but you're right. They seem like they're stuck in the routine. They know it's guaranteed stage time. It's, you know, they're doing well, so they're getting deeper into the lineup on these things.
I think part of the trouble with bringer shows is a lot of the bringers, not all of them, a lot of the bringers, they get this false positive encouragement because the audiences come to see everybody, they laugh. So a lot of bringers are legitimately not funny, but crowds laugh at them. And so then, oh, I'm doing great. And so they just keep going, but they stay inside that bubble. They build an audience, but they're kind of trapped in that little bringer circle.
I kind of slowed down on it. Number one, I felt bad hitting up the same people to come see me because I was working pretty often.
Yeah.
And you can't continue to go, hey, come see me on a Tuesday.
Oh,
hey,
yeah,
come
God,
see
no.
Me
yeah,
on a
you'll
Tuesday.
Burn your friends out. You'll
And the overall quality of the show wasn't good.
Bad.
So I was feeling bad that I'm bringing my friends out to a less than great show. I would much rather, and it's funny, once you break out of that, you put it out to your friends, and they seem to, like, not want to come anymore.
Right, right.
But, you know, now I feel like going to all my friends going, hey, I was on the showcase this weekend. The lineup was absolutely killer.
Right, right.
You know, you get to see me, and I'm a lot better than I was.
Right.
And nine people who are probably better than me.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's the biggest test for a bringer. Like, you could take almost any comic and put them on a bringer show, and they'll do good.
Mm-hmm.
But you can't take a bringer and put them on another show because they won't do good.
Yeah,
right.
I really believe that. I mean, there are some bringers who are actually funny, but for the most part, if you take a bringer and put them on a non-bringer show, they'll do bad, and they'll go running back to the comfort of the bringer show.
Right. And then the biggest thing that I see is they do bad, and you can tell that they did bad. It breaks them. And
yeah.
They don't know how to handle it.
Well, they run back to bringers. And I'm going back to where it's safe
because
and warm.
It's a response they're not used to because the audience isn't packed with family and friends.
Right, exactly.
Most definitely. So who is some of the people you've been doing watching the open mic since it started, seven nights a week?
No, I don't watch.
Yes, you do. Yes, you do. You are, just to give people an insight, like, Dave is the voice in the back that if a joke is funny and you hear Dave laugh in the back, you know that joke is funny. And if he's heckling you, that means you're doing something
wrong. I do heckle
from
the bar. That's a lot of fun.
Absolutely.
I asked Robert to give me a microphone at the bar. He said no.
It's probably a good idea. It's even funnier, though, because it is a voice from the back. There's that pause, and then, you know, set up, punchline that doesn't land, pause, funny thing shouted from the back that makes the room laugh.
That's so you say pause, what you actually mean is silence.
Silence, yes.
Pause, the crowd doesn't respond.
Uncomfortable,
yes.
And then tension is broken.
Open mic's fun, though.
It is a lot of fun. It's fun to see, like, the family of, like, people that are doing it multiple times in a week and watching their progress and watching them.
Open mic is almost similar to bringers, and since there's guys who just do open mics.
Just do open mics.
That, to me, that's not as bad as a bringer show, not at all, but it has that same sort of seductive appeal that can get you into trouble, because if you start playing to the back of the room too much,
very much
by so. Which I mean there's no audience, it's just comics, you're trying to make your friends laugh. You kind of get stuck in that, you know? You're not used to an actual audience. You're not telling real jokes. You're just making in-jokes to your friends.
To your friends.
That can fuck you up a little bit.
I usually say, like, people that do insanely well on open mics are probably not going to do very good. They're not going to be the strongest person on the book show.
Right.
Just because they've tailored their kind of performance and their set.
Yeah,
to,
you run into that, hey, this is an inside joke that everybody who is at the Madhouse at 12:30 in the morning on a Wednesday will get.
Right. And less than inside jokes, it's character.
Mm-hmm.
Like, not that they're doing a character, but the way they act on stage, like, we all know them, so, like, holy shit, look what he's doing. That's hilarious. That doesn't translate to an audience as much.
Absolutely.
Like, there's a few guys in particular who are like, they kill at open mic, and I think they would do well on a real show if they could just sort of adapt. Like, you got to let the audience get to know you and then start doing your little, you know, weird whatever.
Right. They have them be on board with you.
Right,
and
yeah.
Understand where you're coming from.
Yeah.
Right.
Before you start using the N-word.
Well, it's such one of the things that appeals to me about comedy. It's kind of like cooking in the fact that there are...
It's always about the kitchen with this guy.
I know.
There's a million different ways to do things.
Yeah.
There's a certain structure to a set, and there's a certain structure to a dish, but how you get through it can be 16 different ways.
Yeah. I see 30 comics a week, and I'll listen to jokes, and I can, like, I know, like, oh, he structured that wrong. If you would just change this line, that'd be better.
Yep.
You're one of the best. I love notes that you give me at the open mics and after a show. Like, you've been very, very helpful and insightful with, like, hey, you're not conveying that premise correctly. People don't understand what you're talking about.
It's because it's being immersed in it. Yeah. And going back to your point of I'd do my set and I'd leave, you're missing out on a lot of...
Right, yeah.
I listen to comedians here, and adapt things that not what they're saying, but how they're saying it.
Oh, yeah.
To going, okay, if I made a pause like this in this bit that I'm doing, it would land a lot better.
Right.
Because there's so many different, there's so many variations in delivery, and there are comedians that are kind of up there and they're smirking along with the audience because they know what they're saying is really funny, and then there's guys that are just earnest.
Yeah. There's a lot of different techniques, and not all of it's going to work for each comic. So you just kind of learn, like, oh, that wouldn't work for me. That's not my style. Well, oh, that's a great technique. I should.
You know, one of Matt and I's favorites and guys we've talked about on the podcast before, Matt Donaher.
Yeah.
There is no way that I could ever do anything that Matt Donaher does.
It's the
one-liners, the kind of weird awkwardness on stage.
Yeah.
It just, for me, it simply doesn't work.
Yeah.
And
he's great too, because like he's all one-liners, and as a comic, the audience maybe not, but as a comic, after he delivers a few, you realize, okay, it's a lot of misdirection, it's a lot of wordplay. So it almost becomes, he's great, but it's almost a game, like, oh, where's he going to take this one?
Where's he?
Yep. Oh, shit, I didn't see that coming.
And guys who write one-liners have to write so much more material than the rest of us.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, well, Dave, we are at the portion of the show. We are bringing back six questions.
By bringing back, you mean you remembered to
do it? We're remembering to
time.
Do it because we did it for a couple episodes, and then I completely forgot about it a couple different times. But we're going to go back to our six questions.
Are they all true false?
Yes,
because
that would be really interesting for a podcast.
True.
All right, what's your favorite swear word?
Cunt.
Really?
That's
the
a good one.
The game over one. Word?
It's like the last one that has
nuclear
any...
Nuclear option.
Oh, my God.
It's
that
the last
the
one that has
option.
Any bite left to it.
Favorite. My most used is fuck, but my favorite is cunt. Absolutely.
Wow. All right. You're on death row. What's your last meal?
Fuck off. I don't need to eat.
Nice.
No, whatever I order...
Probably, which also explains why you're 6 foot tall and 115 pounds.
Whatever. I'd probably get In-N-Out animal style, but... No, California burrito. Whatever I ordered, though, I would send it back because that's the last little bit of control I could have. You're like, you know what? This isn't good enough. Send
Take
it back.
Away.
Yeah.
I said I wanted it medium.
All right. What food and beverage trend would you like to see go away?
Martinis. Just all martinis. I hate them. I hate making them.
Really?
Yeah. It's not even that much a pain in the ass. I've grown to hate them.
All right, number four. You are on a desert island. What's the one album you're bringing with you?
Ooh, fuck, that's tough.
That's a good question. I want to know this.
God damn. I'd probably go Pearl Jam 10.
That's
really?
That's a great choice.
Great fucking album, yeah.
That is a great album.
Yeah.
Man, Ryan Hicks' bit the other night about Pearl Jam and like the meaning of the band. I never put two and two together as far as what the band's name means. And it, like he said that on stage, and I'm like, oh, I never even thought about that. Wow, okay.
Nice.
Disgusting.
All right. I don't know if this is actually going to apply because you'll probably tell me, fuck off, you don't have one. But your biggest industry inspiration?
Comedy?
Comedy, bartending, whatever is going to elicit an answer from your...
Oh, Jesus. I think one of my favorite comics growing up was Sam Kinison, just like his fucking in your face style. And I thought he was great. I fucking loved him. It's not my style at all. I'm not that larger than life than he is, but he was just so fearless on stage. He was amazing.
Oh my God. I remember the first time I saw him, I was like, Can you do that? Can you just go up and scream at
people?
Yeah,
he was just in your face. So yeah, I love that dude.
All right. Who in all of history, if you have the power, would you like to sit down and have a drink with?
In all of history? Fuck, that's a lot of people to choose from.
Yeah. See, and this is going to crack the door open a little bit, right? Because people don't realize how fucking literate you are.
We didn't even get a chance to talk about movies and stuff.
Yeah,
you're the biggest movie buff I know.
And people don't realize that underneath this beef jerky-like appearance and antisocial behavior is a guy who reads an awful lot, is a big movie file.
Mm. Yeah, I don't want to take the cop out and say Jesus, but I would like to fuck with him and be like, hey, I ordered wine. What the fuck is this?
Jeez.
I'd probably have choose someone that I hate just to throw my drink in their face.
That is, oh, wow, that is such a Dave Callens answer. Like, yeah. That is so, like.
Sit down. You have an opportunity to talk to anybody in history.
And you
sit there for 30 seconds and throw a drink in their face and leave.
The rules of time and space have been bent to make this happen.
And I'm going to be petty with it.
Just, fuck it.
Well, all right, Dave. Thank you again for coming on. Want to hoist one more before we go?
Yeah, for sure.
Absolutely.
All right. Gentlemen, thank you. Maddie, what do you got coming up?
I actually don't have anything on the books before this show is released. I have a couple shows coming up, but we won't make it in time. But do the open mic in Santee at 10:30 at the Second Wind, as
How's
always.
That going?
What day is that?
It's on Mondays.
Mondays?
And it's, hey, if you're a comic and you swing on by, you'll get lots of stage time. If you are looking to work on that 15-minute set, we can get you 15 minutes. You will find out.
We'll carve out an hour for you.
And then you can find me on Twitter at @jmatthewbird and on Instagram at @Matthew_bird.
What the fuck is the J for?
James.
My Why are you name named is after, James. You named after your dad?
Well, it's a weird family tradition. Like, every firstborn male's first name in my family is James. So I'm James Matthew. My dad's James Stephen. My grandfather is James Reuben.
Gotcha.
It's weird.
Dave, what about you?
My first name is not James.
But it's your dad's.
No. I do a show. This is going to come out too late for the next one coming up. But I do a show called Film Punch the last Thursday of every month. It's Mystery Science Theater style. We live riff on a movie at Kensington Video. That's always fun. Mondays.
Is it you and always a rotating?
Always
slate,
rotating
slate
two other people, yeah.
Anthony Gerber's on this.
He's tonight. This podcast will come out after that. Right. So hopefully we killed it.
Right. He doesn't do smart comedy.
He doesn't do smart comedy. He doesn't get it.
I do. I host the contest of the Madhouse every Monday. Other than that, no big shows coming up. I mean, I'm always trying to get shit booked, but nothing on the books right now.
Yeah, I have gone from the penthouse to the outhouse.
Yeah,
I worked Juice Wednesday and Thursday this past week.
Nice.
I
got, Comedy Juice, good show.
Yeah,
show.
And I had the weekend showcase, and my calendar is now a ghost town.
Yeah, last month I got I had the Ice House in Pasadena. Mm-hmm. And I had the Irvine Improv.
Wow.
And so those are really good, fun shows. Now this month, I'm like, what's going on here?
I look at my schedule now, and there's tumbleweed blowing through. So, and you can find me on Facebook, and all of our contact information is thankfully included in our end bumper now, because
yes.
I always screwed it up when we were doing it.
Oh, and also the Degenerates podcast, obviously, which is on our network that we all share,
A Modern Profession.
That's you and Ryan Shores.
And Robert Timothy.
Robert Timothy.
How is the Degenerates going?
It's good. We hit a few hurdles this summer because Bobby was gone because he got married.
Yep.
And now Shores is gone because he's on tour out on East Coast.
Right.
So we're just going to try to regroup and get back to consistent episodes.
Are you guys releasing anything in the interim?
We did miss a couple weeks, and Bobby and I are trying to figure out some shit for the couple weeks that Shores is gone, but we'll see.
Because that must have driven Robert Timothy nuts to miss a week.
Oh my God, yeah.
No, we're his bastard stepchild. His true passion is the science fiction
He's probably got nine of those in the bank that he could drop into a coma and still release every week.
This has been fun, though. I enjoyed this.
Well, thanks.
Fantastic.
Thanks,
Jordan. Thanks,
Dave. And, guys, we will look for us on Google Play Music. We are available there. We are available at the iTunes Store. Look for us. Find us. And Shoutin' a Beer is out of here.
have been listening to Shot in a Beer. For information about the podcast, just search for Shot in a Beer on Facebook or find us on Twitter at Shot in a Beer Pod. Shot in a Beer is also a member of a Modern Professions family of podcasts. For other podcasts you might enjoy and information about live shows and how you can get involved, visit amodernprofession.com or check the network out on Twitter at amodernpro. Thank you for your continued support of Shot in a Beer.